Good almost afternoon to everybody. How are you doing? I really, really, really appreciate you coming this afternoon. Almost afternoon, I should say. Well, I wanted to tell you my name is DC Tardy. I'm with the product group. I'm a senior program manager on Configuration Manager, responsible for the hierarchy and replication and server components and a few other things. But specifically, we're going to talk to you about deployment and infrastructure. And we've got, how many people were here last year? Okay, a good portion of you. So we've got about a 50-50 split here. This is great. I've got some new information for you in this deck. We're going to take a little peek under the hood of some of the replication, what goes on there, give you a little peek of what's going on. And then I've got another presentation tomorrow where I'm going to go like deep dive, you know, kind of pull the engine apart, let you look and see inside the engine what's going on, not just peek under the hood. So again, thank you. I've been in the industry for about 20 years, and I've been on the side of the customer most of that time. And but prior to coming to Microsoft about 3 years ago, I've been working on this product for 3 years. Very exciting. And it's really great to see that everybody has shown up here. Specifically, I want to talk about simplification of the hierarchy itself. The big bonuses here are simplifying your infrastructure and simplifying your administration. When we go into this, we've got a few areas that we're going to talk to specifically to unifying our infrastructure. You might have seen this slide in another presentation. It's kind of the three pillars that we have, but the ones that I'm going to focus on are unifying the infrastructure and simplifying your administration, show you how to do that. Now, this is a way that I've taken some scenarios. I've kind of combined the scenarios in with some of the infrastructure placement. So hopefully, I'm trying to generate some juices in your mind of thinking, well, you know, I've kind of got this scenario here. Maybe this is when I'm going to make a decision to apply some of the infrastructure. So that's how I've tried to bring out some of the infrastructure simplification. And then we'll additionally see a little bit of peek under the hood, like I said, of a replication system. And then finally, we'll talk about some administration simplification as well. This is more of an eye chart. It's not an eye chart, but it's a lot of words on the page, just really to show you that, you know, we want to take your infrastructure that you might have in Configuration Manager 2007 and simplify that, reduce it for your and minimize it for your remote offices, optimize that for your remote offices, reduce it in your headquarters environments. That's really been the focus, to kind of simplify this stuff for you. But essentially, we want to make sure that in turn, we provide you with at least the same level of interface that you have today with your database administrators. And the reason why we want to do that is so that even though we're changing the replication model from file-based replication that you're so used to in boxes with 2007 to SQL Server replication, we don't want you to have to worry about that and still enjoy the same type of communications that you have today with your SQL DBAs and/or the SQL DBA administration that you do yourself. So I want to make this simple. We're just going to run through this scenario, as I was telling you. Another way to show you how we might add, when we're going to choose, when we're going to add the central administration server, which we warmly refer to as the CAS. CAS, we have primary site servers. And the CAS needs to be, in your mind, separated from what in 2007 is called the central site. It is not a central site. It is a central administration server. And that'll show out as we play out as we go through the presentation here. Primary site servers, when do I place a primary site server or a secondary site server? And specifically distribution points, I want to bring that out because there's some good changes there for you to help minimize your infrastructure. So here's the company profile. And you may have seen this before. We've got a couple of administrators, 2 to 4 administrators in this environment. They're not their 100% job. It could be for some of them, but we've got 125,000 clients. And specifically, they've got pretty standard ways that they do inventory, software updates, and application deployments. And as we talk about that, I'll just kind of roll through, you know, keep that in the back of your mind as the profile for this particular company, because I'm going to bring out some of the things that I've heard customers that we've been working with on over the past couple of years, and some of the questions that they might have, or that they did have of me when asking about what do I do with my placement of my site servers. And to focus on this scenario, just looking at the top level central administration site, this is the CAS. When do I need one? Well, specifically, if you were going to have more than one primary, you're going to always have to have a CAS. If you are going to have more than 100,000 clients in your environment, you're going to have a CAS. Now, 100,000 clients is the limitation or the upper limit of supported clients per primary site server. So that's the reason why this statement is true, because if you're going to have more than 100,000 clients, naturally it implies that you can have more than one primary. And finally, we've reduced a lot of the processing done up at the top level in your hierarchy. So as far as the inbox processing and stuffing stuff in the database from all of the state messages coming in, that happens down at lower levels and gets replicated up. So we want to drive administration from the central administration site, thus the name central administration site. And that's what you're going to see here as we go through this. One of the things I want to point out, during migration, you're going to want to put this central administration site on a separate server, but if you have plans to have more than 100,000 clients in your environment and you want to install a fresh Config Manager 2012 environment, then you're going to want to install a CAS first. Even if you at 75,000 clients today, but you think, you know, I might be going to 110,000 clients, you're going to have to install a CAS first today, because we don't have the process to allow you with a standalone primary to add a CAS at this point. So you want to start out with your CAS first. It'll help drive administration and reporting and so forth at the central administration site, and then you'd add a primary at that point. So I just changed to when do we need a primary site server. So I'm using in this scenario here the scenario of Chicago, and specifically that's the headquarters for this company, and you can do a lot of things with the primary, and we'll go into it in the future and later in the deck, but you can use a single primary to support the number of clients here, both clients and servers. That's a big change from Configuration Manager 2007. Because now we do this admin segmentation and this logical segmentation of clients, it's all logical now, as opposed to physical, putting in a primary site when you want to set different policies. And that'll become clear as we go through the rest of the deck. But here we would have a primary site if you want to scale to 100,000. And if you want to improve or reduce, I should say, the impact of any kind of failures, you're going to want to add another primary site. But for that administrator, although can administer from the primary site, we want to move them up to the central administration site for administering. And it'll become clear as we go through the rest of the presentation why that is so, but it doesn't eliminate the scenario where they might administer from a primary site server, as just shown here. You might install a primary site server because you want local administration. You want to adhere to content regulations and political concerns. But again, as I'm pointing out, you don't want to put a primary site server in for these reasons, right? You don't have to do it anymore for decentralized administration or for separate policies and separate languages and things of that nature. We've handled that all logically, and it's helping you to reduce the footprint of your infrastructure. when might I need a secondary site service? So in this case, I've got a branch office that's connected to my headquarters office, and there I've got 15,000 clients. I want to optimize that a little bit, but I'm going to put in a secondary site server. And the reason why I might put in a secondary site server is because I have concerns of that network bandwidth between my branch office and my headquarters office, and I'm concerned with the upward flow of all the clients reporting in and getting policy from a management point that might be up in the headquarters area, and I want to get that down through my secondary site server. So I'll put it secondary site server down in that location. That implies that you would have additionally your management point and your content in that location as well, and that helps minimize the need for network bandwidth utilization up to your headquarters environment. But there is no local administration for a secondary site server. It's simply appliance-like in that you push it, it sits there and runs and does its job for you. You can monitor it from the central administration site. Of course, you can monitor it from the site that it reports to as well, or the one that it's connected to in the primary site, because secondaries connect to primaries. So finally, when do I need a distribution point? We might need a distribution point. In this case, I've got a distribution center or a processing center for our fictitional company here, and they have a lot of high turnover in this particular processing center, and they're regularly re-imaging their machines. And because of that, they want to go ahead and put some distribution points on site there, but we don't have to put a secondary site there because we've got pretty good connectivity across the WAN, and we're not concerned about the 450 clients that are out there talking back to a management point and pulling policy and so forth back at the headquarters of this company. And however, you might not need a distribution point when you've got a branch office that just has a few clients out there, and you're really going to make use of branch cache as an example, or you can handle all of the traffic using bits across that network. So this is kind of the whole gamut of when you might put in, when you would put in a central administration site, a primary site, a secondary site, and a distribution point. And we'll get to talking about some distribution point specifics next. So let's look at the detail there. What has changed in the distribution point specifically so that you can rely upon that in the location? Well, you've probably already heard that there is only one distribution point role now. Okay, in your mind, you might be going, oh no, what am I going to do? I've got branch distribution points out here and so on and so forth. Well, current 2012 distribution point actually can be installed on client computers, or it can be installed on servers, which is the most likely case. It'll be installed on servers. In some cases where you had branch distribution points, you would put the role on a client. But in this case, what you've got here built in is Pixie Multicast, and the big news is scheduling and throttling for the content that's coming down. That's the reason why you can put a distribution point out at a branch office without a secondary site. Now just throttle that content coming down to that distribution point. And you'll see that happens as I go through a conceptual review of file replication. But specifically, what you need to know is the ability to optimize that remote office and take out some of those secondary sites that you only had there just to throttle and schedule your content. Now you can just throw a DP out there and now you're optimized. So it's reducing and simplifying your infrastructure at this point. One thing I wanted to point out is this great tool. Used to be a whole bunch of tools that you had to use. Now there's only one tool used for content pre-staging. And for content pre-staging, you take and export content, if you will, from a site, and you can export it into multiple files or to a single file. It's up to you, and it's up to your process on how you do that. But when you take that and put it on a distribution point, whether it's Sneakernet, whether it's pre-staging it before you ship the machine out, however your process handles getting these distribution points out there, you can use this tool to simply point it to a pile of files, suck in the content, and off you go. Excuse me, I'm sorry for hitting my mic. I want you to know that it will go ahead and take a look at what has already been potentially updated in the hierarchy and do a file diff, basically, and pull down just the changes that it needs, not the whole package. So let's take now another tack here. We're just going to kind of, we've talked about infrastructure for a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about your boundaries and how we start assigning sites and content lookup in the environment and take a look at how that's done. Now, specifically, we've added a new feature called Forest Discovery. What does that do? That really looks at the forest so that we can help minimize your discussions with your AD administrators. Specifically, we can go out and grab from Active Directory the sites that are defined in Active Directory in the subnets and pull them in for you and allow you to use them as opposed to having to manually go get them from the administrator, write down everything via email or by napkin, and then typing it in and having some errors. This allows you to pull it in directly. You're also given the ability to do this through looking at forests that are untrusted. If you have the credentials to do so, you can publish this information out to those forests and discover sites and subnets out to untrusted forests as well. Things that haven't changed are specifically the information that you would get out of the AD forest. We still have boundaries based on these four ideas of domains and IP subnets, AD sites, IPv4, IPv6, we'll see that in the next slide. And then it can automatically create the boundaries for you. And I'm going to move this down because I can't move it too far. It can bring the AD sites and subnets in for you, automatically, keep them up to date, and create boundaries on the fly. And you'll see why just creating the boundaries on the fly is good for you, because we have added a new thing called boundary groups. But one thing on this slide I want to point out, at the very bottom, we get asked a lot about supernets. Okay, we do understand supernets. We will read supernets as defined in Active Directory, but we'll pull it into a boundary and create ranges out of those supernets. So what is the process flow? It's a very simple process flow, getting the discovery from the Active Directory, in this case, contoso.com. We run discovery. We go look at the domains, the subnets, and so forth, and then we pull them in and create boundaries for you on your behalf. You no longer have to type those in. I think that's good news, right? Yeah. So that helps out a lot. And I'm pointing out that the attributes here for those boundaries are still the same on how we break them up, but reiterating, it's automatically generated for you, and you can assign sites via boundary groups, and you can assign content lookup via boundary groups. Once that boundary comes into Configuration Manager, this is different than 2007, of course, that boundary itself does not allow for any site assignment or content lookup assignments. That simply gives you the definition of the boundaries, and then you throw them into boundary groups. It allows you more granular control of how you manage your boundaries, and the boundary groups are what you use for site assignment and content lookup. So let's see what that looks like in the demonstration here. So if we go over to the administrative console and we take a look at the new Active Directory, Forest Discovery, we'll see here on the CAS that that is where the Active Directory discovery is going to be, Forest Discovery is going to be running from the CAS. And we, right now it's disabled, so I'll just kind of walk through enabling it. Well, there's not a lot to walk through because all I have to do is click Enable the Active Directory Forest, and you're good to go. Okay? Now, I can add other discovery attributes in here to look at untrusted forest. I don't mean attributes. Other discovery to look at other Active Directory forests that are untrusted. I'll be prompted to put in my credentials, and you're good to go there as well. So let's just take a quick look at what it's done. I have already preloaded the done the discovery of this so that I wouldn't have to have you sit here and wait for it. And specifically, I've picked up, of course, the default first site name. You've seen that. And then I added the Europe and the Western region. Now, you saw in my previous scenario that I had Chicago and I had London. In this case, I'm going to use some simple assignments and create a specific boundary group for each one of these. So I pulled in this automagically from the Active Directory Forest, and I'm just going to simply add that item, the Western region, to a new boundary group. And in this one, I want to set up this boundary group for site assignment. And for that, I'm just going to say HDQ site assignment. All right? And you can see here that it's got the Western region since I had already highlighted that. And in this case, all I'm going to do, if you look closely, is use the boundary group for site assignment. And I'm going to click that, drop this down, and just simply choose the primary one site that sits in my headquarters area there in Chicago. And that's how I'm going to create a site assignment boundary. This gives you a lot of flexibility, of course, because now we're breaking out boundaries for content lookup and site assignment. So let's do the content lookup one. Let's go to the Western region, and we're going to create a new boundary group here. I said Western region, but I'm actually going to do it from the European region. And I'm going to do a new boundary group here, but this one's going to be for European content lookup. And in this case, I am not going to use the site assignment, but I'm going to look for content location. So where do they find that content? Well, in this case, I have a distribution point in my demo boxes assigned, loaded on the primary two. So because of that, it popped up here, and I'm going to simply say, for those that match this particular boundary, the boundaries in this boundary group are going to get their content from this distribution point. Of course, you can add as many distribution points as you need. And if you want to take a look at what's going on here, you can see that we added the, I clicked on the boundary groups so that you can see that I've now assigned one member, just scooting over here very slowly, I don't want to make you sick, is there's a European content, has one member count. That member count is that single boundary that I added. The HDQ site assignment is also there. And then I've added a site system to the content lookup, which is that primary two for the European boundary group. Now, in this case, how do I make sure that we continue to update my boundaries so we make sure everything continues to work? You go back to your discovery methods, and I could have done this to begin with, but I just wanted to point it out to you that in this case, and in fact, I didn't click enable at the or OK last time. In this case, you can choose to automatically create Active Directory site boundaries and do that for both new boundaries when they're new sites when they are defined in Active Directory and for new IP subnets when they're detected and set up by the AD admin. So this really helps you, again, reduce that contact point and that error point of actually manually having to type it in, find out the information from your Active Directory administrators. Is that coolness or what? Okay, so let's go back to presentation and get back to hierarchy replication. So now then, I've given you a little hint on, I was going to give you a little peek into hierarchy replication. So here we go. Some of these you might have seen before, and a lot of it you have not seen before, but essentially I'm reiterating here, I still want to be trustworthy to you and give you the same touch points with your database administrator. And that those are the pillars that I really want to push forth for you to feel comfortable with this new replication model. The key point on this is we have replication in the past that happened through inbox replication, where you would take a file to replicate up your hierarchy going over SMB through the file system, right? Everybody knows this in 2007. But for 2012, it's not so. You still have your site servers. They still have the inboxes for any of the status that comes in from clients, et cetera. But example is the primary site server processes that and then puts it into the SQL server. Now, the key here is replication occurs over SQL Server to SQL Server communication. It's not over SMB. So that's where the replication actually occurs, and that's what this additional port that's required for the SQL Server service broker. And that's where replication occurs. You're going to be introduced now to a couple of, some of you know this, some of you don't, based on your hands that were raised. Two rules of thumb here. I'm not going to talk as much about file content replication at the bottom, but I'm going to talk more about the data that comes up and replicated through our SQL replication technology. One is global data. This is a rule of thumb. Global data is data on objects that the administrator has actually typed in. And that data is replicated throughout the hierarchy so that that data is available on all primaries. So what used to be the SCF, as an example, that used to sit as a file on your file system is now inside the database. And it's replicated across the entire hierarchy, so you have a copy of the exact same SCF for the entire environment, so that it helps us with recovery, of course. Now then we can recover much easier because we can find the site control file just by pointing it at a reference primary site, as an example. I'm not going to go into details on restoring, but that was an example. Obviously, the other things would be like your application data, your CI data, and we'll see that in just a minute. But for site data, the rule of thumb is anything that's system generated. So global data, data that's typed in generally by the administrator. Site data is anything that's system generated. Site data only flows one way, up the hierarchy all the way to the central administration site, and that central administration site is the only one that has, well, it's the only one that has the full picture of everything in your hierarchy, and I'll go through a conceptual slide on that. Here are some of the data types that are available, or some example data types that are replicated. One is, I'm not going to talk through these all, we'd be here all day, but I'm just going to point to the top ones. One thing that you need to understand is any change you make in your hierarchy is effective across the entire hierarchy. Specifically, let's talk about deployments. When I deploy to a collection, that collection is evaluated at the primary, although you may not see the members of that collection at primary 2 that report to primary 1 over here. You would see the count of the clients. So that count is global data, so when you're deploying an application, you will know the impact when you deploy it, but you might not see all of the members of the collection if you're managing at the primary. Of course, if you're at the central administration site, you'd see all the members there. So let's just take a quick look at the administration here. And as far as this administration goes, take a look at the replication. As far as the replication goes, we're talking about the global data. Global data is replicated between the central administration site and the two primary sites. It's also a subset replicated out to your secondary site servers. A subset of that data is replicated there. Mainly the information for those clients that need access to the information from new policy that comes down. It gets the information from that secondary site, and then it would go back up and get additional information that it might need if necessary. But this helps us improve all of that replication of that global data across even to your secondary sites. Now, for the site data, as I was explaining, site data simply comes up from your primary sites and goes up to your central administration site. That central administration site is key because all of the aggregate data is there. Hence, the big reason and the big push for administering from your central administration site. That also is the place where, of course, you would be doing all of your reporting from as well. Now, content information flows down your using normal file replication method, flows down through your primaries, down to your secondaries. But in this case, you have the ability to do, since we've reduced a lot of the infrastructure requirements, you have the ability to not only take data from a primary to a secondary. In this case, it was coming down from Amarillo to Canyon, and then we can route it from Canyon to Hereford so that from a network proximity perspective, your content's moving through your hierarchy as you deem necessary. Okay, this is when it gets a little more technical here because this is that peek under the hood, our data replication service. This is how we actually move the data. We can move the data, as you saw, up the hierarchy, down the hierarchy, so we've got a one-way or a two-way replication model built into our code that we sit on top of SQL Server using the SQL Server Service Broker, and we manage it through a component called RCM, the Replication Control Manager, runs under SMS Exec. It takes a look and makes sure that everything's replicating appropriately on the SQL Server, wherever that SQL Server assigned to that site is processing, and making sure that all replication occurs appropriately. So such we rely on two key features from the SQL Server, being the server SQL Server Service Broker and the SQL Change Tracking. I'm going to get into more detail about this tomorrow, so I'm just going to kind of go through this pretty quickly so that you kind of get an idea the way that we look at the data, because there's a lot of data that we replicate, and we associate those pieces of data to what we call replication groups. So you would have a set of tables assigned to a particular replication group. That replication group has a certain attributes associated with it, namely, in this case, how often. In this case, the sync interval happens every minute for this particular replication configuration group. The other thing that you need to understand is we are, it's got a global nomenclature here, so we know that replication configuration is global in nature. So you're going to find this group in all the tables, or article data as we call it, is replicated across the entire hierarchy to all the primaries. There is, of course, global proxy. That global proxy is what I talked to you about earlier that exists down at the secondary site server. So if you have a replication group that has global proxy replication pattern, that's going to be found at your secondary site servers. There are some examples. I'm not going to talk to these in any detail at all. These are examples of data that is replicated, whether it's site data, global proxy data, or global groups. And you can know that global groups, again, are found at all the primaries, the hierarchy. Site groups are found at the primaries and up to the hierarchy, as we saw. And then you've got your global proxy groups, which are from your primaries down to your secondaries. Okay. When you install a CAS all by itself, or a standalone primary all by itself, there is nothing going on. There's no replication going on because there's nothing to replicate to. So you will see that this is going on. However, when you finally attach a primary to a CAS, when you first install that primary to the CAS, replication's got to initiate and got to initialize and get everything set up so that we have an active site. As part of that, when we're replicating global data, you're essentially going to have the primary say, "Hey, Mr. Kaz, I'm out here. Give me an information to start setting myself up." And as I start getting that information, then I have enough information to send my data back up to you and configure myself. Once that finishes, then we start replicating the global information from the Kaz down to the primary site. However, once, as far as the global data goes, we take and get any of the global data on an initialization, which would happen at first time setup. Global data would also initialize maybe sometime in the future when you might be doing a recovery type of scenario. Or global data would also replicate, again, when you've been offline for over 5 days. We set that in there to account for long weekends when you might recognize that the primary site has been down for 4 days, 3 days, something like that. Oh, let's turn that on and make sure it's back up and running so that all we have to do is replicate the changes and don't send all the data that exists in the database again. So there's that 5 day limit there that's part of that, what we call the retention period of information of all the changes that have occurred. We'll go into more detail tomorrow about that. But it sends and copies the global data up via the SMB and sends that data up, and that data is transferred and plugged into its peer site, whether it's the parent or the child, which way it's replicating. And it's once it gets all the data, it stuffs it into the database, and we're up and going on the global data. In this case, the site data, once the global data is already initialized, that site's essentially workable. You can start doing things with it because now you can start pushing your applications, and that data is just fine. For a new site data is going to be essentially empty because there are no clients assigned to it, right? So site data being pushed up is going to be next to nothing. But when you've got an older site and you have some kind of recovery scenario where it might have to really put the data that was in its database from backup and push it back up, it may take a little longer because there's more hardware information, hardware inventory, software inventory, status messages, and all those types of things that are site data have to push up. Well, we do global data first, and that way you can get your site up and running much quicker because the global data is going to be much smaller. And once all of that data is replicated back up, still using BCP out of the database from one site and sending it up to the CAS and putting into the database that way, then the sites become active and we're ready to go. These are called site maintenance mode and replication maintenance mode. Your CAS is always going to be, not always, it will be in replication maintenance mode when a particular site might be initializing its data, whether you're attaching a new CAS or you're doing a recovery or something like that. Doesn't mean that the CAS itself is offline, because it's not. It's still running, it's got all the global data, it's just handling an initialization with your primary site in this case. Replication maintenance mode says, you know, global data is done, I'm essentially active once my global data is finished, and I'm just handling my site data. Your site data, it's up at the CAS. Your reporting might not be accurate just yet because replication maintenance mode isn't completed and gone into the fully active state because all of it hadn't shot up, but you're still able to manage your clients and still able to send deployments and things of that nature. And essentially, this is what I've kind of been describing here, just put into bullet points, just so you know that when a site is in site maintenance mode, which would only be at the primary sites and the secondary sites, it's not usable. But because of the small amount of data in the global data set, it gets replicated rather quickly, comes back into online as far as that's concerned, and goes into site maintenance mode, and then you're good to go at that point. So let's look. I'm going to go not into a whole lot of detail as far as all of these modes and initialization today, doing that tomorrow and talk tomorrow. But I'm going to go through simple monitoring, look through the console, and help you understand what you might be looking at as far as an administrator looking to administer your hierarchy. So I've got three sites here. I've got the primary CAS, I've got a primary one and two and a secondary. And we've got the links here. The good thing is, for the demo's sake, they're all active. Tomorrow they won't all be active. Okay? Today they are all active, so I can just kind of show you what's going on.
That means that replication is good both ways, going up and down between the sites. So, but an administrator might not always come into this particular node when they come here to administer. The administrator may come into the site hierarchy node where they can take a look at what's going on. Ooh, wait a minute. There's a problem here. On the site hierarchy diagram, we can see that the primary one has an issue. I wonder what that issue is. What might I do? I can hover over this, and I can quickly see that in this case, the database file disk space, we've got issues. I've preset this alert so that you can, so that I could point this out to you. You can set up disk space alert issues on your database, and it'll show up in this diagram here. It'll also show up in that database replication node that I showed you. I'll go back to that in a minute and tell you how. But in this case, it showed up here, and you can take a look at it from that standpoint. You can also see it from the alerts. You can see this red active alert here, which essentially says critical low free space alert. And if you look down below to take a look at what's going on, you can see that on-site PR1, we've got a database issue because it's fallen less than 100 gigabytes of free disk space. Now, I set mine kind of high because I've got a lot of free disk space and I wanted to do it for demo purposes, but you would, out of the box, get a default warning at 10 gigabytes free and a default critical alert on 5 gigabytes free. But that's changeable by you if you simply go over to your administration WonderBar and go to site configuration, and in this case I did it on the primary. And if we just look at, I can choose properties down here on the right click, or I can choose properties right here at the ribbon and choose the alerts tab. You can see in this case how I've set up the alerts for disk space free critical and warning alerts, and that's really how you set that up. And finally, let's take a look at what it actually looks like. And I don't want that, obviously. Let's take a look at what it looks like in the monitoring. So under monitoring of the database replication node, the links are active because we still have everything working just fine, but I got an alert, so I need to look and see in this case on primary one. Well, on the parent site, looks like everything's good. I can look at some of these other pieces of information, configuration information, and the majority of what you see here that can be, firewall ports not, but the majority of these are monitored on a 30-minute basis and remediated as necessary. Of course, we can't do that with disk space either. We don't want to do it with firewall ports, but certainly with things like certificates, machine certificates, and for certain other roles that we have set up that DBA might accidentally delete or whatever, we will go ahead and remediate those types of information. However, again, like we said, the problem was on the child side in this case, primary one. You can see that the database alert shows up here as well, so that you're good to go in this node as well to understand what's going on. And it says, you know, currently it's got 95 gigabytes free space, so you immediately know how much is free just from this view, because we monitor that, like I said, every 30 minutes, so you know. And then I want to get to a really cool thing that we added to the site hierarchy diagram, where you can look at this diagram and place your site servers on a Bing map. Okay, so that requires that your administrative console have access to the internet, wherever that administrative console might be running. And as such, I preloaded in my geographical view the scenario I had, where I've got a primary in Chicago. I've actually got the CAS there as well, and you just can't see it because I've zoomed down a lot. And then also in Europe, where we've got primary two, and then I happen to put the secondary site down at a branch office in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I used to work for American Airlines, so I know a lot about Tulsa. Nevertheless, let's zoom in here, and let's take a look at this. Let's see. You can kind of see here, I put, to be a little more accurate here, I put the Kaz simply with Chicago as its location, but I put an actual address for the Primary One site in Schaumburg, Illinois. Happens to be across the street from my favorite fast food restaurant called Chick-fil-A. But that's why I chose that. But nevertheless, I can't find that in Redmond. I'm just dying for it to get back into Seattle. There's no Chick-fil-A's there. That's a site issue, so we won't go into that. Let's go to the geographical view, configure the view settings. And so you can look at site locations, and you can see that for Primary 1, I put a specific address in there so you can know exactly where that site is placed. For the others, I just put locations that were pretty simple to type in and show on for purposes of the demo. You can put long information if you're that detailed. And simply, this just pushes straight to the Bing Map, so whatever you can type in for Bing Map lookups, that's what goes on here. You can click on the primary site and say, okay, what's connected to the primary site? And, oh, look, I'm connected to the CAS over here in Chicago, and if we go all the way down the states to, it's a long way because I've zoomed in, we can get to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and find my secondary site. Do you like this this feature here? Yeah, I think it'll help a lot. I think it helps show it. Okay, so let's get back to the presentation a little bit and get into some of the administration simplification. So when we're simplifying your administration, you see that one of the biggest things that we want to do is you don't want to put primaries out just for administrative control. We want to reduce that. And so because of that, we've added the logical control in our, and I'll show you in a demo in just a minute, the ability to handle that appropriately. I keep checking my time over here to see how close I am. So you can remember now that collections are evaluated globally based on the information I gave you in my replication talk, but the members themselves are not global data, just the count is global data. And when you make a deployment to a Configuration Manager 2012 collection, it is evaluated on every primary. So no matter what administrative console is connected to, which site it's primary 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or the central administration site, you make a deployment to a collection. If that collection results have members across the entire hierarchy, it's going to be effective. Okay? You're going to get a little number that tells you how much your impact is. Now, we've simplified hardware inventory additionally to this. Now, that's something that a lot of you have had need to be simplified because we've gotten rid of the MOF file. All right? So there's no more MOF file. Okay, you're clapping. That's great because it's wonderful. But what do you do with your investment of your existing MOF files? Well, you'll see a demonstration of importing the MOF file that you've already defined and pulling it into Configuration Manager 2012. So how does this happen? So I can deploy client settings, define client settings on hardware inventory and other attributes, and deploy them to a particular collection. And that's how I don't have to have a separate primary out for every time I have a different policy for a particular group of systems in a collection. So in this case, we've got both a laptop and we've got a server, and we've got the server have default settings, and we've got default settings on the laptop, but for server settings, I might want to pull down some information on the NT event log, but for laptops, I want to pull down more information on the battery itself or the PCMCIA controller. So these things are different. Of course, you would, in the past, have to deploy additional infrastructure to handle this. But in this case, we don't want to do that. We want to go ahead and handle it with our administration node and going under the client settings. There is something that we have a concept of is priority on these client settings. So you'll have what you think of a resultant set of policies when you think about GPOs. Well, here you've got a resultant set of client settings, and essentially the lower the priority, it precedes or supersedes anything that comes lower in the priority. So if you have a same policy for the same thing, and I'll point that out with remote control in a minute. If you have one policy for remote control and another policy for remote control pointed to a single collection, whoever has the high, or in this case, the lowest priority, it's the highest priority, it's a lower number, highest priority, it will override any other settings deployed. So I first want to run through a remote control scenario where we've got some executives that we don't want everybody on the administrative team to be able to remote control into. So that's a pretty common scenario, I think. And we already have a workstation remote control setting set up here, and I just want to show you the properties here and know that we're just working with the remote tools here, and I've already have this enabled. And so anybody can go ahead and remote control to the clients to which this client setting is deployed. Now, this client setting isn't deployed yet because you see the number zero here. And what that means is I can work on this for a little bit. I did it again. I'm pressing the wrong keys for Zoom It. So if you look at this a little bit closer, you see that the workstation remote control has zero deployments to it. That deployment means that the fact that it has zero deployments means that you can modify, change it, and what have you, and it has no effect on your hierarchy. So you've kind of got a little workspace, and that makes it kind of easy for administrators to manage that. But I want to create another client setting, and I want to call this the client setting for executive system remote control. And I just want to put in it the specific class in here for remote tools. And I want to edit remote tools to say that, well, this is disabled. Let's go ahead and enable it. And I want to go ahead and configure the firewall settings on those clients out there so that it will allow for remote control actually to come in and open that up for the remote control. And in this case, I'm just going to choose the profile for the domain to change, but of course you can do it for whether they're on a private or public network. Right now I'm going to set the viewers to only one. And my viewer is going to be Meg because she's the Uber administrator and the only one anointed by the executives to be able to manage or remote control into their systems. Of course, she's the single throat to choke too. So now Meg is on there. We see that there's one viewer. Anytime we want to look and see who it is, we can go back and see. And it uses the administrative credentials on the Active Directory domain that she logs in with. And I set that to OK. Now, if I were to take these two collections and I were to go ahead and deploy them to take these two client settings and deploy them to a single collection, what do you think would happen? It would be the workstation remote control would override the client setting I just set up for Meg on executive workstations. So I don't want that to happen. I want hers to be a higher priority. In this case, I'll increase that priority and make sure that the executive system remote control overrides any settings below it. And I'll go ahead and take, and we'll just look at the, go ahead and deploy this to all systems. Or I could do it to just desktop systems or whatever the case may be, but you can see the member count here and how many that's going to impact. So let's go ahead and do that. And you can see as far as the deployments go, that one is deployed and this one is deployed as well. If I do this one to all systems, again, this one is going to be the collection that is executive systems, and the other one is for all systems. And so we just take the aggregate and we'll find the higher priority wins out in this case. If we want to look at the hardware information in particular, you go and look at the properties here and look at hardware inventory, and here's where the MOF file comes in. You've got your investment in your MOF files for 2007 and your settings that you've already set up for hardware inventory. You can simply point it to a MOF file, import it, and you're done. It's really that simple. If you want, for instance, in my case, I've got a request from my executives that say, okay, we're investing in this VoIP software, and we need to have some video conferencing going on. So how many people actually have, in my environment, webcams? So I can just search for that here and say I typed in cam and found the class here, click it, and now that's part of my default inventory, and we start pulling that in. Well, if it's some obscure setting that laptops, you might have some custom laptops, and there's something there that you don't want to have to type in specifically or make a MOF file for, you can also go ahead and add an additional class, connect that to a Golden Master reference PC where you've got all of the classes on that reference PC, and pull that class in and check it for inventory at that point. Those are ways that we've helped you ease the administration for you for the hardware inventory part of this. All right. Let's go back here and talk about collections a little bit more. Roles and collections. So now I've got this idea of I've got people managing and administering with no less, we don't need as many primaries anymore. How do I keep them on track with managing applications and managing collections appropriately? Well, you know in the past that in 2007 that we did it one way, and here we're going to talk about how we're doing it into 2012 because we've simplified this. Again, going back to my theme of simplification, and we want to be able to, with role-based administration, allow you to map those administrators directly to a specific task or function. In this case, you might have one for the application deployments or the application manager. You might even have one for infrastructure administrator. But those rules you would apply to a particular administrator that's using the administrative console. The other goodness about this is it also simplifies the console itself and only shows that administrator what's relevant to them. What can they actually do? We'll kind of take some of that clutter away from them so that they aren't presented with stuff that they can't actually work on to begin with. And so you've got roles which apply to, like I said, what's listed here is a software update manager. You've also got scopes. I might have applications that are specific to a particular language, and I can't read it, but only my French employees can read it. So I'm going to add a scope to all those applications and say those are managed by my French administrator. I might have, or I also would have, the ability to limit collections and who can work with specific collections, and we'll see how that works real quick. In this case, in 2007, we would have had a primary site in France and a primary site in England in this particular example. Meg, still the central administrator, has to push out the content and the applications, package programs out to those different sites. And then Louis, in this case, and Anthony, in this case, can manage that information, manage those packages at those particular primary sites. However, since the primary site is no longer relative from the segmentation of administration, I've taken them out of the picture here because it doesn't matter anymore because now we've got role-based administration. So Meg and Louie and Anthony can all manage from the central administration site. Meg would put the initial content out there, but in this case, Louie would just come in and handle all of the French collections and packages or applications directly from the central administration site. Likewise, Anthony does the same as the English administrator. What does that mean from a collection perspective? You're going to see a little more about collections tomorrow as well in the migration presentation that we'll talk about how you migrate collections from 2007 to 2012. But here we're going to talk about what does this collection limiting thing look like. We're going to give a collection, in my example here, to Louis. Louis is going to only be able to manage French systems. So Meg takes Louis, assigns him to the French Systems Collection, and that's all he can manage. He can manage also any collections below it, and he can not modify the collection that he's been assigned to, but only collections below it. So that also means that he could create another collection as well. So once Meg has assigned Louis to that top collection, he can manage everything underneath, just not what he's been given. So the rules that were used to create the French Systems Collection here are what is applicable to that French Systems Collection that Louis has control over, and that is his domain to work with. What we ship with is essentially two collections. We've got some others that are limited from these two root collections, but essentially you've got an all systems collection and you've got an all users and users groups collection. And all collections are based in a hierarchy off of those two collections, be it a users groups, users and users groups, or the systems collection. I'll show you how that works here in just a minute in the console. So let's go ahead. Oops. I may have skipped too quickly here. No, I didn't. Okay, so let's just take a quick look at the administration of setting up the security for assigning Louis to a particular roles and collections and so forth. So I'm going to go to my administrative users under the administrative wonder bar and go ahead and add a new user in here and start setting them up so that they can administer from the administration console. So I'm going to simply add out from the picker from AD and choose Louis, because that's who we're going to work with. And I'm going to add him to be an application admin and an application deployment manager. So, however, because Louis happens to just work with French systems, I'm going to remove the rest of these defaults from here and add him to, first, a security scope. Remember I was telling you a security scope. We assigned those security scopes to the objects for which we want the administrator to have access. In this case, I have one application defined with the security scope of French. And because of that, when Louis is able to go into as an application administrator and look at the administrative console, I'll show you this in a minute, he'll only see those that one application that is a French application. So I'll add that. But I also want to give him some collections. So I want to give him a collection for the user collections, and I want to give him all of France because I want him to manage all of France. He's got Paris as another collection underneath in the hierarchy, but I'll give him all of France. And also, I, as the administrator, want to give him some system collections, so I'll go up here and assign all French systems to Louis. All right, making a little sense here? It always helps to see this in the console so that you can understand it a little bit better. So in this case, I'm going to go back up here and just kind of take a quick look. We've got the roles that he's been given. I added him a scope of French and given him the collections both for France. All right? So we click OK. Now how can I show this to you? Well, I've got to open up another console in Louis' context. So I'm going to minimize this real quick and I went off the screen up at the top. And do a run is to launch the command line in the context of Louis, type in his password, and up will come the console. And as part of the console, you can very quickly see that some of his clutter has been removed. If I look in user collections, he doesn't see all those user collections that you've been seeing in my previous demos, which include the executive desktops and all the other ones. He only sees the collections that were for France and any of the limited collections below it. So you've given him a domain within which to work. Also, for the device collections, remember I only gave him French systems. If we take a look at the software library and take a look at what he has access to, I'll just quickly go back and switch to, the other command console that Meg is using. She's the full admin, so she can see everything. So let's look back over here. You can see that she can see under user collections everything here, device collections here. Goes over to the software library, you can see that she sees software updates, operating OSD, and all these applications here. Hop back to Louis. All he can see, because we've given him a scope down on objects, he sees the PowerPoint viewer that's in the French language. I couldn't write French, so I didn't know how to type PowerPoint in French. I think it's just PowerPoint. But nevertheless, the point is, I put it in parentheses so you'd know, right? And finally, when he is able to go ahead and deploy this application to his collections, he's only able to see France and Paris and wants to deploy them to all those users that are in Paris, and so he chooses Paris as the one. Now, if he wanted to send them to all the systems, this PowerPoint viewer to the device collections could also do that as well if he wanted to do it. And he can create two deployments, and you'll see deployments in the next couple of sessions and learn how that works. But I just wanted to show you how that simplifies the ability to manage and scope down administration, makes it really easy for the Meg super administrator in this case to scope down what they're able to see and manage. So I'm going to go ahead and escape out of here. And that kind of brings us toward the end of this talk, and I'm just going to quickly wrap up with some information for you to understand again. Just this is something for you to take back with you. You'll have access to these slides as part of the convention and get this information later. But just so you know that again, this is a recap of what we already talked about. I don't have to go about it in a lot of detail, but what is, in fact, the scalability improvements because we've reduced the load at the hierarchy. I mean, at the top of the hierarchy, put a lot of the load down below, so you can do a lot of administration up here. And we've allowed you to minimize your infrastructure and consolidate your infrastructure because of all of this administrative segmentation and because of the ability to handle distribution points as an example that I gave you without having to put secondary sites out there. These are, again, this is just an eye chart. This is kind of a reference slide for you to understand what is required for these levels of software for both the servers and the database and so forth. This information you can find online. There is one update in here that is going to be published online. And that has to do with the SQL Server 2008 R2 cumulative update. That's going to be updated online, so what you're going to see in this presentation is more up-to-date than what's out posted. It'll be posted in the next week or so. How can you prepare today to start your migration? This gives you a few things to think about when preparing for that. And if you have the opportunities to start flattening your hierarchy today where you've got some server sprawl where you didn't need it, perhaps start removing that now, make it a part of the project to start doing that at this point. Also, you've got a plan for running the 64-bit parts of this, the requirement for SQL 2008, and use branch cache where you can. That really gets you ahead of the game to be able to reduce some of the infrastructure because we support that in 2007 as well. When you're going to talk about the moving your content over into 2012, we really don't use the drive letters anymore. Move those into your UNC paths, and that's really going to help you move forward in that perspective. One thing I needed to point out here specifically was this mixing of devices and users in the same collection. If you notice now, we're very user-centric. You've heard the message a lot. If you've got those mixed, you're going to run into issues as you migrate those things across because we don't know necessarily what to do with the users and the and the devices at that point, because you've got them all mixed in the single collection. So you want to go ahead and, as you can, start separating out users into separate collections and devices into separate collections. Things you can do next there, we've got blogs, we've got how-to videos. I don't know if you've seen, how many have seen any of the blogs or how-to videos that are out there yet? Okay, we've got new ones posting on a regular basis. I've written a few of them. I think my how-to video, one of my how-to videos was posted this week, supposed to anyway, and then you can take a look at the website, go look at VHDs. A lot of the hands-on labs are going to be available for you as well via TechNet, and you can go look at those online and just take a look at all of the information that you have available to you. So listing, obviously, of some of the presentations that are available, those of you that are interested in additional deep dives on moving from, for replication in particular, I'm going to have one in the afternoon tomorrow where we, again, open the hood and look more at the engine and look more at what's going on. For those, for the migration piece of it, it's going to be happening tomorrow morning. Take a look at that one if you're moving from 2007 to 2012. Those are some big ones that I want to point out. And then in this room following me is going to be a lot of the application managements, running the new application model and how that deploys and so on and so forth. So I just want to encourage you to fill out your recommendations and give me a good point. So anyway, no, I'm just joking. I do want it, but you can do what you think is best. I really appreciate your time, and I'll take some questions if you want to ask questions, or we've got about 3 minutes up here to do that, or you can come up to the front.